Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the 144th episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Melissa. And we made it through the first week of summer. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus.
It's almost over.
Sure. Sure it is. And our son decided he wanted to play football. So that's been fun.
We'll see. He's doing a football camp, which means they have tents. They build like little fires and they sit around in a circle.
Like a Boy Scout tent?
No.
Or a Boy Scout camp?
I'm joking because they call it a camp. But like, are you guys camping outside?
No, we just play football.
Well, they're roughing it on the football field. So let's do this at the beginning. If you like our show, we would love some rate and reviews. It really helps us to get out there, penetrate more people's ear holes.
Yeah, more penetration.
That's what we need. I think everybody needs more penetration.
As we get older. We'll just leave it at that. More penetration is required. Daniel, that's disgusting. Well, take it however you want.
We also have a Patreon where you get episodes that are ad-free and you get 4 extra bonus episodes a month. So you can check us out there on Patreon. And we're trying to figure out how to do an Apple subscription. So be patient.
We're just trying to adapt.
We're trying to get like
difficult.
Hip.
I just burped a little bit.
When I said hip.
Hipsters. We want to be hipsters.
We do.
No, we don't.
I want to see Daniel in those tight jeans.
Oh, God.
With the hair.
I can put the tight jeans on, but you know the consequences of tight jeans?
What's that?
Gut hanging out.
Ooh.
Because all it does is squeeze it up.
It's sexy.
And then I got to wear like a midriff, mid-abdomen squeezer.
Mm.
And then that squeezes everything up. So then you put a chest compression squeezer on.
You know how hot you would be?
Then I have like just all neck fat.
Perfect.
And I look like No Neck of the North man, you know. No, I'm not going to do that.
On that note, Daniel, do you have some factoids for me and our 11 listeners?
I'm going to try and blow through this quick.
All right. Let's do it.
I am crediting BuzzFeed for gathering all of this information, and I'm going to read it to you, which means, oh, I see Daniel didn't do much research. Well, I did. I researched BuzzFeed stories, and I thought this was appropriate for this time era we're living in. Yeah?
Okay, yeah, let's good. Do
Perfect.
It.
This one's titled, People Are Calling Out Popular Internet Trends That Need to Stop Right Now.
I hope I agree with these.
Didn't say right now. It said as soon as possible. I added the right now.
Okay.
All right. Number one, any health trend started on or perpetrated by TikTok, Instagram, and the like. And a nutritionist is not the same as a dietitian. Dietitians are medically trained and regulated.
Yep.
I would say everything's flooded with this, like nutritionist advice.
At least they've kind of let the apple cider vinegar thing go a little bit, because that was the save-all for a long time.
There are great health benefits to apple cider vinegar.
There are, but
not
that's all
of
that
them.
People were pushing were like vitamins or,
right.
or ACV and gummies, like that kind of stuff.
They do help.
They
help
do.
Your gut.
I do like apple cider vinegar. I'm just saying.
It tastes horrible.
Everyone who's going to do it has already been doing it.
True.
Okay.
Anything on clean talk? I have no idea what clean talk is.
I love clean talk. I love watching people clean their dirty floors. It's relaxing to me.
This person wrote, people who were never taught to clean are being taken advantage of by people who were also never taught to clean and just mix everything because, ooh, pretty colors get all the views. Someone is going to mustard gas themselves, either making one of these videos or following the video.
Mm-hmm.
Stop mixing chemicals. This person wrote. Lobster, lemon, lime. Oh, I like that handle.
You know what exploded because of clean talk?
What?
Fabulosa.
Oh.
Their stocks like went through the roof because of clean talk.
But I'm guessing like they're complaining people are mixing chemicals together. Yes. Going, hey, if you mix Clorox and Windex and
white vinegar.
And then things that remove oil off of your driveway.
Mm-hmm. And then put a little bit of Fabulosa in there and you're good to go.
Yeah. And certain chemicals sometimes can make deadly gases.
Oh, I've done that before. Thanks, clean talk.
Yeah, don't do that. All right, cleaning experts sprinkling baking soda on everything and vacuuming it up. Is that a thing?
Yeah, like on carpet and rugs.
What?
I haven't done it because I'm too lazy.
Stop that. You're destroying the motor in your vacuum. Baking soda has superfine particles that even the best filters can't handle and cause serious wear and tear on the vacuum motor. Not to mention, you'll never get it all up, only adding to the dust and debris in your air.
Amen.
There it is. Ooh, I 100% agree with this one.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Filming yourself working out at the gym.
Oh, stop, please.
Okay, so I was at the gym. It doesn't look like I ever go, but I was there, and a fella showed up. He was fit. Might have had a little assistance, you know, for his fitness, but whatever. It's fine. He started setting up, like, a camera, and immediately one of the people that worked there came over there. They were pissed. They're like, no, put all this stuff away. And good. He brought in like bags of stuff. Like he was all set to film himself. And I'd never seen him before. So I think he recently joined and then was like, I'm going to film myself working out. And they're like, nope, can't do that. If you're going to film yourself, do it at home or in a private gym area with no one in the background. I would be so embarrassed if I saw someone filming themselves and I'm in the background.
That's oh, yeah, I would 100%. Die. Don't do it.
Go work it out with the gym or, yeah, do it private or something like that.
Do it after hours.
Skincare and tanning. Forcing young girls to be overly self-conscious about their very normal functions, such as pimples and aging, just makes me sick. And tanning just leads to sunburn 9 times out of 10.
Well, yum. Yum. Young girls should not be using the things that 40-year-olds are using on their face.
Yep.
Do a little more research before you let your kid go into Ulta and just buy whatever she wants.
There you go. All right, number 6. Prank channels. Not even touching on the family ones that can cause trauma to the children's social lives and mental health, but some people don't realize they are staged, thinking they can replicate them. Whether it's public pranks on strangers or at home, the person being pranked can respond unpredictably, harming themselves or others. Just not worth it. Yeah, totally agree.
Yes.
I think people think that these things are all real. And yeah, I think most of them are staged.
Oh, absolutely.
If you start reading comments to things, people go, yeah, this is clearly staged.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's going to take that kind of a risk.
Ugh.
Rage bait videos for clicks.
Yes.
I hate when people make videos with the intent of pissing people off just to increase engagement on their posts. It's extra infuriating when they waste a ton of food in the interest of getting people to comment on their techniques. Such a waste.
So, rage bait videos are videos that people make in order to get the comments back that are people angry at them. Whether it's food videos, political videos, instigating stuff between them and their neighbor. Gotcha. It's all to get comments back. Because every comment is a good comment in that it gets you out there. It pushes you out into the algorithm.
Okay, so then that means we're sitting here looking at society going, oh my God, what has this country turned into? When in reality, it hasn't turned into that. It's all perpetrated on purpose.
It's all for clicks and comments.
God, we're going to hell in a handbasket. Filming strangers without their consent. I see TikTok videos of people filming strangers and romanticizing it. People are just going about their day, waiting at the bus stop, sitting in the park, having coffee with a friend, or even children. But some weirdo is filming them from a distance. I would hate if I opened TikTok and saw a video of me just walking down the street. I'd be like, what the hell? It's not aesthetic and cute. It's creepy and giving stalker. Yeah. Don't do that. Terrible. Okay, last one, because we got to hurry up. Family vlogging channels. Oh, God.
Yeah, stop, please.
You're putting kids under the pressure on the internet when they're too close to choose otherwise. It turns the parent-child dynamic into a transactional one where the inner lives of these children are exposed for clout and the parents are rewarded for using their kids. Can't imagine how those kids would feel once grown, but can't be good.
Yep.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Awful. Can we just live our lives?
Without it being all yeah. over the internet?
I mean, I get it. We're doing this, but we this are. Is it. We're not, I'm not going to film us walking to the bathroom. Daniel, what are you doing? I'm going to the bathroom.
I think I did do a reel with that. That was funny, though.
I'm leaving.
No.
It's over.
Said, Daniel.
It's over. All right, that's it. That's okay. all I got.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Daniel.
Yeah.
You ready for my case?
As always, never.
This is the case of Ryan Jenkins and Jasmine Fiore.
Pretty name.
Do you know them?
No.
Okay. Around 7 a.m. on Friday, August 15th, 2009, a call came into the Orange County 911 call center. On the line was a man who had been collecting cans in an alleyway in Buena Park, which is a suburb of Los Angeles.
I was going to ask you, this is Orange County in California.
Yes.
So it is. Okay, mm-hmm. Perfect.
While searching through a dumpster near the site of a large apartment complex, he came across a medium-sized tan kind of gray material suitcase.
Mm.
He zipped it open and was horrified by what he saw, the body of what he believed to be that of a small child.
Oh, God.
The poor guy crawled out of the dumpster and immediately called the police. And soon, law enforcement was on the scene and got to work securing the area. After photos were taken, the suitcase was once again opened. To the investigator's surprise and a little relief, this was not the body of a child, but the body of a small white female, an adult.
Gotcha. Okay.
She was nude and had long dark hair, but her face was turned and concealed, meaning they couldn't see it. It was kind of turned into the suitcase, the side of the suitcase.
So there is an entire small adult mm-hmm. female inside a suitcase?
Yes.
Oh, God. Yes. She had to been like...
She was maneuvered into
only
that suitcase.
The double-digit weight or something small. Like
she was small.
Very small.
Mm-hmm. She was very
gracious.
Small.
Okay.
And the woman's fingers and thumbs had all been removed.
Ugh.
The body was transported to the county coroner's office. Once she was laid out and her face was visible, the coroner was shocked to see the extent that the perpetrator went to keep this woman's identity a secret. Besides there being no fingerprints, the woman also had remnants of teeth left in
teeth.
Her mouth.
Oh,
only remnants.
Yeah.
Someone had tried to smash out all of her teeth.
Yeah.
Her nose was broken and her face was beaten in. She was unrecognizable.
Mm.
She had also been strangled to death. So she didn't die from the beating. She died from being strangled.
Okay.
A local sketch artist was brought in and drew the woman's face, hoping to capture a familiar quality to her features that someone would recognize and she would finally have a name. The sketch was sent out to the local media to be featured on the Los Angeles News, but really nothing came from that. But with everything done to keep her identity a mystery, there was one thing that the killer missed. She had breast implants.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And those are... Do they have... Oh, sorry.
Well, no, it's okay. All breast implants have a serial number.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Attached to a name. Mm-hmm. And the number was run through the database. And 3 days later, on August 17th, the woman finally had a name. She was 28-year-old Jasmine Fiore, a California native from the small town of Bonnie Doon near Santa Cruz.
Mm.
You know where that is, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Jasmine had moved to Los Angeles a few years before in hopes of becoming a star.
Of course.
She was a bikini model, and she actually worked for Playboy.
Me too. Shut up.
Jasmine was hired to work events and found her stride as one of the Playboy girls of golf in 2004.
Oh my gosh.
This was like the height of Playboy, right, in the early 2000s.
I would say so.
Now, after a year, Jasmine was invited to become a coordinator for the golf tournaments, putting on 35 charity golf tournaments every single year. And she was really good at this. She was sweet, had a great personality. She was perfect for hosting events like a golf tournament.
But she was representing Playboy.
Yes. She was also considered
like a Playboy bunny kind of. Kind of.
She was never featured in the magazine, okay. And she was never featured in like the Cyber Girls, but she was part.
She was a representative of Playboy.
Yes.
Gotcha.
She was. Okay. And she was beautiful and just the complete package.
So when she shows up, she goes, "Hi, I'm Jasmine from Playboy, and I want to do XYZ." And then everyone's like, "Yeah. Absolutely.
You can do whatever you want." Yeah.
Right.
Yes. She was everything.
Sex sells, right? Let's be honest.
I mean, it does. But also Playboy is the girl next door. Mm-hmm. That's what they're trying to sell. Yeah. And Jasmine was that girl. You could go up and have a conversation with her about almost anything probably. And she would leave you feeling better than you had before you started talking to her. She was that girl.
Okay.
But after leaving Playboy, Jasmine worked hard and eventually got her real estate license.
Good for her.
Yeah, she was a worker. She was kicking some serious butt. But she would still do occasional appearances in clubs and events, especially in the Las Vegas area, which is really where she worked a majority of the time.
Okay.
When it wasn't Playboy. And she, like I said, she worked really hard and she was very ambitious. And I wrote here, she was just a really cool chick.
Mm.
Now, investigators began digging deeper into Jasmine's life and soon discovered that she had been reported missing by her husband of only a few months, 32-year-old Ryan Jenkins. He had called the Los Angeles Police Department on August 14th at around 8:30 at night. So this was the day before her body was found.
Okay.
So they were moving really quick. They got her identity really fast.
All right.
Ryan told the missing persons unit that Jasmine had dropped him off at their penthouse apartment that afternoon after the couple had driven home from a poker tournament in San Diego. And that was the last time that he had seen his wife, and she was not answering her phone or returning texts. Now, Ryan Jenkins was a real estate developer from Canada, and he also dabbled in property developments in the LA area and in Las Vegas. And Ryan was also an up-and-coming reality TV star.
Of course he was. Yeah, because what year was this? Again, you told me, I already forgot.
2009.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ryan had recently been cast in a VH1 show called Megan Wants a Millionaire, where he vied for the attention of a woman named Megan who was looking for love, but only if the man was worth $1 million or more. Do you remember that that reality show called Rock of Love? And it was Brett Michaels.
Yeah. Yep.
So Megan was in that show and she kind of became a fan favorite. And then they gave her own show.
Okay.
Like a spinoff. Remember like Flavor Flav?
Yeah.
Or Flavor of Love. All those
Flavor of Love.
All those shows that we would binge on a Sunday.
Horrific.
Or I would binge.
Horrific shows that we all watched.
Oh, gosh. This was like the height of reality
Flavor
TV.
Flav.
I love that show.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so he's in the show called Megan Wants a Millionaire.
Mm.
And Ryan actually made it to the final three, but was let go in the second to the final episode. So
isn't
he didn't win.
Isn't she the center of, isn't it called Megan Wants a Millionaire?
Yeah, so Ryan made it to the final three.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I misunderstood you.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Maybe somebody Only else did,
he
too.
Made it on the Megan Wants a Millionaire to the final three.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
He was in the final three. He was let go in the second to the last episode. So this reality show had just begun airing, and it was forecasted to be a relatively big hit for VH1. The ratings were really, really good.
Sure.
So they're trying to get a hold of Ryan because he said his wife was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was nowhere to be found, and he wasn't answering his phone. So finally, later that evening, Ryan answered his phone and said he wasn't actually in L.A. He was in Utah on his way to Canada to resolve an issue he was having with his visa. But he would be back as soon as he could. So investigators are wondering, your wife is missing and you're going to Canada?
Yeah, and now you're going to try and
leave the country.
Do paperwork?
Right. They didn't even tell him that she was found murdered.
Right.
They're just trying to check where he is.
Right. Kind of get his story.
Now, Jasmine had been given a rape kit during her autopsy, and male DNA was found.
Hmm.
But the DNA was not Ryan's. It actually belonged to a man named Michael Cardozzi, who was Jasmine's ex-husband, whom she had divorced in 2005. What? So now investigators are thinking, well, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with Ryan. Maybe her ex-husband came back and killed her.
But still, if your spouse is missing, you wouldn't then go, hey, you know, I got a bunch of stuff I got to take care of.
Right.
Can you look for her while I'm gone?
Any logical person would not have left the Los Angeles area when when your spouse is missing.
Unless you're like kind of separated and fighting or I don't know, whatever. But.
So Michael just so happened to have been released from prison only a few days before.
Oh.
He had been convicted on a drug charge and he and Jasmine had divorced soon after his incarceration began.
I guess obviously the thought process is he gets out and then they bang it out, so to speak.
And then he kills her, maybe.
And then, or whatever.
Or maybe they're because also thinking maybe this was like a drug cartel thing.
Oh.
Like maybe he got out because he was in there for drugs. And then to teach him a lesson, they killed her. There's so many things going through investigators' minds right now, but they're just trying to figure out what happened to her.
But then there's his.
But there's this DNA.
DNA evidence in or on and about her person.
Yes.
All right.
Investigators immediately tracked down Michael to his mother's house in San Diego and rushed down to interview him. But Michael had a solid alibi. He was wearing an ankle monitor, and the digital receipt showed that he had been in the San Diego area since his release. But Jasmine had been there at the prison when Michael was released.
What?
Along with his mom and her mom. And at some point, the two had sex, and some of his DNA still remained.
Gotcha.
Now, sperm DNA can remain in the vagina for up to 7 days. Sperm itself can live for 3 to 5 days. Of course, having a period or tampons or discharge can impact the DNA.
Sure.
So.
Okay, so in other words, she went to him.
She did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But she's married to someone else named Ryan.
Eh.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there.
She waited long enough for Michael.
Yeah. He deserves a welcome back present, right?
Well, yeah.
I guess.
And Michael was devastated by Jasmine's murder, and investigators believed that he had nothing to do with her death. He was really shaken up about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Obviously. I think he still loved her.
At least liked her enough to...
Well, she liked him enough.
Yeah.
They now focused all their attention on finding Ryan because he was their prime suspect. There was really nobody else that could have done this or had the motive to do this. They just have to figure out what the motive is, right?
Yeah.
Now, Ryan and Jasmine were wed on March 18th, 2009 at the Little White Chapel on the Vegas Strip, 2 days after meeting in a nightclub.
You know, there's no point in delaying things. You should just go for it, especially if you're in Vegas.
And this was only days after he had been eliminated from the reality show Megan Wants a Millionaire. So he had had his heart broken on the show because he actually really liked her. And then went to Vegas, met Jasmine. 2 days later, they got married.
And said, screw it, let's get married. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay. Because she's divorced the convict fella.
Yep, she was single and ready to mingle. Ryan had actually called Megan soon after he and Jasmine were married and told her that he had met the love of his life and the two had gotten hitched. That they shared the same birthday and believed that this was fate.
What?
He and Jasmine were soulmates and they were meant for one another. Megan was actually shocked. She thought that they would, meaning she and Ryan, would begin dating after she returned from the finale of the show because she actually wanted to pick Ryan, but found out pretty quickly that it was actually up to the producers who she picked to be with at the end of the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she had told the producers, I actually really like Ryan. I want to go with Ryan. And they were like, nope.
Nope. You got to be with Joe.
So she dumped Ryan and not telling him that this was the producers that did this. So then he's heartbroken. He runs off to Vegas and marries Jasmine.
Okay, can I ask a quick, simple question?
Yes, please.
Because of the premise of the show, Megan Wants a Millionaire. Is Ryan a millionaire?
No, his dad is.
How does one qualify to get onto Megan Wants a Millionaire?
So they were supposed to have been worth over $1.5 million.
Right.
But there really wasn't a vetting process for their finances. So when they did meet these guys and said, I'd like you to be on the show, are you a millionaire? All they had to do was say yes. And then Ryan said he was worth over $2 million, but it was actually his dad who was worth over $2 million.
All right. I have so much I'd like to say, but we don't have time. And then that's too much banter.
Oh,
so
shut up,
just
shut
continue.
Up.
It's fine. Whatever.
So Megan congratulates Ryan on his marriage and they promise to keep in touch. We're going to remain friends.
Okay.
And Megan actually says that she believes Ryan wanted that trophy wife on his arm and to be part of what he thought was a Hollywood couple. Because he's married to somebody who was in Playboy and then he's this up and coming reality TV star.
But then isn't that kind of what Megan was trying to become? Because then she's basically saying, hey, I want to go on this gold digger show where
it was just part of her persona.
I know,
right?
But it's like, I want to be with a millionaire and maybe a guy I like. But the first thing is millionaire. So in other words, it's all about the money.
Right. And she said she knew Ryan didn't have money because he was wearing a fake Rolex and only brought one pair of pants for an entire 5-week shoot.
Oh, God. I would never get a Rolex, even if I were a multimillionaire, because then it just looks like you're trying. I feel like only people that really, really are trying to sell themselves as something they're not would wear a Rolex. And I know there's plenty of people that can afford them. I'm just saying, to me, that's what I'm getting is, wow, you're trying really hard to prove something.
It's like driving a Porsche.
But I get it. It's a TV show. So the viewers have an expectation.
Yeah, they want to see a millionaire.
Right. They're Hollywood's version of what one would look like.
Which $1.5 million seemed like a lot in 2009.
It's not.
It's not.
But whatever.
Ryan and Jasmine basked in their whirlwind romance for a bit, but soon reality hit and it was very apparent that the two just weren't right for one another. Jasmine learned that Ryan didn't have any money. His dad did, like I said. His dad was a Canadian real estate developer and he was the millionaire.
Okay.
And Ryan continued telling Jasmine that his money was tied up at the bank in Canada. So the two were living off what Jasmine made, and she began to resent Ryan for that. because she worked really, really hard and he was spending her money like it was nothing.
Okay, now hold on. Hold
on. Okay, what?
We're going to get sexist.
Mm.
Well, what if he worked really hard for his money and she didn't have any? Then they're living off of all the money he worked really hard to earn.
Right, but he promised that he was this millionaire.
Okay.
Not to Megan, but to Jasmine, that he was going to give her this grand life. Mm. And that after they got married, he's like, oh, wait a minute. My money's in Canada. We got to live off of all yours. Mm. And wasn't doing anything to actually get it from what she saw.
Should we talk about the definition of net worth and millionaire?
Mm-hmm.
So net worth means just that. Assets minus liabilities is net worth. But usually when you say like millionaire or something like that, it's more about you have $1 million in investable funds, not my parents gave me a house worth $1 million and I actually have zero money in a savings account. That means you have a net worth in theory of $1 million, but it's not real because you'd have to sell it and then you'd have to live. So typically when you hear someone say, I'm a millionaire, it really should mean I have $1 million liquid, say of stocks, cash, that sort of thing, that's investable.
Okay.
It really should not count, say, like the value of your home because you have to live. I suppose you could downsize your house, you know, and then you have equity and that sort of thing. But really, net worth is different than millionaire status or billionaire status.
Okay.
So it varies widely. That's why it's hilarious to me to hear things like that. Like people say, oh, I'm a millionaire. That doesn't mean anything. You could barely make ends meet and be a millionaire.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Or be, I'm sorry, have $1 million in net worth because it means all of your stuff. Well, what are you going to do? Sell all of your stuff? Then what? Sit on a pile of cash like Scrooge McDuck?
Maybe. Oh, and go swimming in it?
Go swimming in it?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. Just had to get that off my chest.
Okay. So they're just trying to keep up this false facade.
Mm-hmm.
And their lack of finances immediately put a strain on the new marriage. Plus, Ryan's jealousy and anger issues became very apparent. He did not want Jasmine talking to other gentlemen, and he became physically violent with Jasmine.
She works for Playboy, well, for crying out loud.
This is according to her friends and family, okay, saying he was not a good guy. He was physical with her, but it took her a really long time to tell people that he was an angry, physical guy.
Well, she probably didn't want to admit that she screwed up.
No, she didn't.
Yeah.
She did not.
That's fair.
And she wanted out of the marriage within weeks of saying I do, because Ryan was a fraud and she deserves someone better. Investigators discovered that in June of that year, Ryan had been charged with battery constituting domestic violence in Clark County for striking Jasmine in the arm. The couple were at a party in one of the Vegas hotels, and Jasmine saw an ex-boyfriend and greeted him with a kiss. And Ryan saw that and came unglued, and he hit Jasmine in the arm with his fist, and she lost her footing and she wound up in the pool. And then Ryan spent a couple days in jail, but his dad bailed him out, and he was due to go on trial for that incident on December 18th of 2009. So that same year.
So it was so bad, it didn't matter if she wanted to press charges. He just immediately went to jail.
He did.
Because it was probably all on camera and everything else.
Yeah. And she had a big old bruise on her arm. And her friends and family said she had bruises in other areas too.
I know it's different when you have kids, but if our son hit his wife and was arrested, I would not bail him out.
Oh, hell no.
I would cuss him out. Be like, what in the hell is wrong with you? Mm. And then I'd call his poor wife and be like, I am so sorry. You need to leave him. He obviously has a problem. I'm very sorry.
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. Like, I'm not bailing him out. Need to pack your stuff and get the hell out of there. I'm saying that now so that, you know, whatever. And I know it's easy to say because it didn't happen to us, but
But right now he's a good kid.
Why would you bail your... Never mind. Parents, God.
Now, investigators also found out that in January of 2007, Ryan received a conditional discharge and 15 months probation for the July 2005 assault of his ex-girlfriend in Calgary, Canada. Ryan was ordered to undergo psychological counseling for domestic violence and attend outpatient treatment for sex addiction. Okay.
Okay, so don't marry anyone after 2 days in Vegas. I was joking. Don't do that.
The incident between Ryan and Jasmine should have been the end of the couple's relationship, right?
Yes. Nope.
And Jasmine had even tried to get the marriage annulled, but there's actually no record in Vegas or Los Angeles of that happening. But her mom does say that she tried to get the marriage annulled.
So how soon after they got married did he punch her?
I believe it was in June, and they were married in March.
Oh, wow.
So they'd only been married a few months. And when she died, they'd only been married 5 months.
What?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
This all happened very quickly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But by July, Ryan was in Mexico competing for $250,000 on another VH1 reality TV show called I Love Money 3. The premise of I Love Money is that contestants of various VH1 dating shows who failed to win those shows are given a chance to win money. $250,000.
Oh, okay.
Now, while he was away in Mexico filming, Jasmine returned to Vegas full time, and Ryan continued trying to win her back. So they thought that this break would either be a permanent break or somehow they would get their stuff together and come back together. So he continues trying to win her back, but he's calling her constantly, leaving long emails and texts, telling her that once he won the money, that things would be different. Because it's all about money, right? Uh-huh. Everything would be better if he had money. He'd be able to take care of her and give Jasmine the life that she wanted and deserved.
With only $250,000 before taxes?
Yeah.
Okay, guess what?
What?
I'm not a tax guy. I just pretend to be one sometimes. $250,000, he's going to get absolutely just slaughtered in taxes. So he'd be lucky to take home $150 of that.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're in L.A. They probably drive cars they shouldn't be because they can't afford them.
They do. They drive a Mercedes and a BMW.
Rest my case. Okay. $150 that wouldn't last a year.
I know.
Take care of her and give her the life she wants on $150,000?
It sounds good in theory, but it doesn't actually work.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so
This guy have a job?
Yeah, he's a reality TV star.
No,
actually, he also does real estate, but it just wasn't.
No, he's a failed reality TV star.
But we're talking about 2009.
Okay,
so real estate is not very nice.
Oh, God, no. It's post 2008. It is in the slump.
Yeah, so he's not making money. She's probably not making very much money.
No.
So, wait, what were you saying? He's a failed reality TV star? But we don't know that yet. He just started. He's only 3 episodes in to his reality.
Well, he failed the one with Megan.
He did, but nobody knew that yet because they're only 3 episodes in being aired.
Oh, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but do they get paid to appear on these shows?
Yes, and you get paid the longer you stay. And then if you win, you get money.
All right. Yeah. All right, fair enough.
Okay. So an email was found from Ryan to Jasmine on July 27th. Written while he was in Mexico filming the reality show. This is what investigators find.
Mm-hmm.
It read, "If you can come back to me and stop all this craziness, we can have a wonderful life. Your forgiveness, trust, and loyalty is all I need right now. And when your love for me grows and our lives are heading in the right direction, we will truly feel complete. I will never leave you. I only want you." And he continues to profess his true and undying love for Jasmine. But those around Ryan during production said that his calls began to sound desperate and sometimes volatile, like his calls to Jasmine.
Mm.
Constantly wanting to know where she was and who she was with, getting angry and making threats. And when filming was over, Ryan returned home and the two continued trying to build back their relationship, or just trying to build a relationship.
So she actually...
She took him back.
Took him back.
Mm-hmm. She did.
Oh, God. Why?
And then Jasmine's battered and mutilated body was found stuffed in a suitcase, lying at the bottom of a dumpster.
In Orange County,
yeah,
California.
So what happened? What happened during the time he got back from Mexico to the dumpster? Which in that time period, though, she also slept with her ex-husband.
Yeah,
so things were not very good between them.
But now with that backstory, I can see where a guy getting out of prison is superior to your current husband.
Oh, absolutely. Especially because it seemed like she and Michael had a really great relationship and marriage. It was just he was making money being in drugs. God. Okay.
All right.
So two investigators, they realized that Ryan was on the run. Obviously, mm-hmm. He's on the run.
Sure.
You report your wife missing and then she's found murdered in a dumpster. And despite widespread coverage of the case, he had still not stepped forward or contacted the police, because by this time, once they knew her name, it was all over. It was all over the media.
So this dumbass clearly thought, we don't know this yet, I'm just making assumptions, of course.
Yeah.
That no one would be able to identify her.
Yes.
And that would be that. And meanwhile, he's done the right thing and reported her missing. Because then, of course, they say, well, why didn't you report your wife missing when she was missing? So he's like, I did the right thing. I reported her missing. And then thought this was just an unidentified body found in L.A. that has 40 million people in it.
Right.
Gotcha.
And then
okay.
He would also be... Then he would already be in the safety of Canada.
Just in case.
And the safety of his mm-hmm. family.
And go, so. I don't know anything mm-hmm. about anything. She must have gotten something.
Yeah. And so they're thinking, like, he has to know.
Mm-hmm.
He has to know that she's dead. And then why isn't he in contact with anyone who loved or was associated with Jasmine? Why wasn't he contacting her mom?
Right.
Trying to figure out what happened. A publicist for Ryan told a tabloid that Ryan had intended to consult with an attorney and then would cooperate with the Los Angeles police, saying that Ryan was planning on meeting with them in the future, but Ryan never did.
Ryan has a publicist?
He has a publicist from the show. Okay. Because a show was going
he's
on.
He's assigned a publicist.
Mm-hmm. Now, an APB was put out on Ryan's black BMW X5, possibly headed toward the Canadian border.
Look at the big pants on Ryan. X5. Goodness gracious. Okay.
And then soon after, Jasmine's white Mercedes CLS 550. Is that 550?
Yeah, that's the big sedan. Those are really cool. I think they are some of the best looking Mercedes out there.
Yeah, and it's got custom black trim.
Mm-hmm.
She had exactly it all decked
out. 550?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are big, big sedans. A nice car.
So that was found on August 18th
mm-hmm.
in West Hollywood, which was less than a mile from the couple's penthouse apartment. They kept calling it a penthouse apartment, but I actually couldn't find the exact location of where they were living, but it was nice, I guess.
So it's a 400 square foot studio dump.
Called a penthouse.
Because it's in L.A.
The interior of the car was covered in blood.
Oh.
There had been a violent struggle in that car.
God. In her car.
In her car. Blood was found on the passenger seat, all over the back seat, and smeared across the rear window. And someone had tried to clean it up. And the majority of the struggle happened in the back seat. And there was dark hair everywhere, like it had been pulled out.
Oh, God.
The hair and blood were a perfect match for Jasmine. So if she wasn't killed in the car, she would have been severely beaten in this car.
Mm-hmm.
Police were able to get warrants for the couple's cell phones. And they retrieved text messages and emails, so messages meaning voicemails,
mm-hmm.
and emails between the couple, and a timeline began to emerge. Now, Ryan returned to the States after filming in the second week of August, after being apart for 5 weeks, I believe. For some reason, Jasmine, now with dark brown hair, because she was a total Playboy bunny with the blonde hair.
Sure.
And the beautiful big eyes and the gorgeous body. She now had really dark hair.
Okay.
For some reason, she took him back. That's what I was getting at. Wanting to make a go of their marriage. And on August 13th, the couple traveled from West Hollywood down to San Diego for a poker tournament, driving Jasmine's white Mercedes.
So I take it Ryan is the poker player?
Yes, Ryan's the poker player. It was like a charity poker thing that he was invited to.
It makes sense that the person that pretends to have money, it just so happens to love gambling and theoretically be good at it.
He also went back and forth from Las Vegas to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's kind of obvious.
So they checked into their hotel, the L'Auberge Del Mar, around 3:30 p.m.
Oh, it's fancy.
It is. L'Auberge.
Sure.
According to the hotel's extensive video footage or video system, footage shows the couple arriving and their bags being stored on a luggage dolly and wheeled into the hotel. Plain as day, you can see the suitcase that Jasmine's lifeless body was stuffed into being loaded onto that cart, the dolly.
Oh, meaning, okay.
What?
This is when she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive.
Okay, okay. All right, never mind.
This is when they get to the hotel.
Gotcha, okay.
The couple check in and are then seen walking down the hallway to their room on the ground floor. They are not seen again until the couple exit their room, all dressed up, and head out to the valet station at about 6:30 p.m.
Mm.
They drive themselves to the poker tournament at the Del Mar Hilton, which is less than 5 minutes away. According to Jasmine's cell phone records, she spends the rest of the evening texting with an old boyfriend from Las Vegas, Robert Hasman, a high-end realtor in Vegas. At one point, she texts that she's done with Ryan, she doesn't love him, and that she wants Robert to send a plane for her to come and get her.
What?
Jasmine is going to go back to Vegas to be with Robert. Witnesses who were at the tournament said they saw the couple get into an argument, but did leave together before 12:30.
Okay.
Only they didn't go back to their hotel. The couple took a cab to a club called the Ivy. Another argument was witnessed at this club, and then the couple left around 1:30 a.m. But during the hour at the club, a text was sent from Jasmine's phone to Robert that simply said, "suck it," which did not match with what the exes had been sending all night.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. So remember that.
She would never write that.
No.
No.
Ryan and Jasmine left the club and went back to the poker tournament at the Del Mar Hilton to pick up the Mercedes. They were last seen around 2:30 a.m. in front of the Hilton. Witnesses said that they seemed fine, that they were not arguing, and that Jasmine was not crying and she didn't seem upset. Less than 2 hours later, Ryan is seen running down the hallway of the hotel where they're staying, the, what did I say? L'Auberge. What did I say?
L'Auberge.
The L'Auberge to their room wearing the same black suit, but he seemed panicked.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. And then at 6:24 a.m., Ryan is seen again coming out of the hotel room, and he's wearing like a muscle t-shirt and workout shorts, and he's carrying clothing and toiletry items in his arms. And I actually believe that he's talking on the phone because he has his head cocked to the side where it looks like it's holding a phone against his shoulder because he's carrying everything else.
Right.
He checks out and then he leaves. Jasmine is never seen leaving that room.
Wait, he checked out carrying all that stuff in his arms?
Yes. And it's like her toiletries too. He's carrying everything in his arms.
Gotcha.
And he's never seen with that suitcase because he's carrying everything that was in the suitcase.
Okay.
Ryan then reports Jasmine as a missing person late into that evening.
Mm.
And then Jasmine's body was found the next morning.
So they never got a video of him coming out with the suitcase, though?
No.
So where's the suitcase? How did he get it out to the car without...
I know. I'm going to tell you.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's good. It's not good. It's horrible, but no. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Ryan's black BMW was spotted heading north toward the U.S.-Canada border through Washington, towing a wakeboard boat.
What?
The vehicle was eventually found with an empty boat trailer attached, parked at a marina in Blaine, Washington. So I'm telling you guys, this all happened within 7 days of her body being found and the end that I'm going to tell you.
Gotcha.
So everything happened really, really fast. So Ryan was spotted, I believe it was the 18th. He was spotted in the BMW towing his wakeboard boat north. Oh,
so did he already have a wakeboard boat?
He already had one.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right, right. How does this guy have so much money?
His dad.
Piss? Okay,
I think he did have money, but probably pissed it all away, and his dad was now his beneficiary.
Well,
I don't know. It's 2009,
he's making
you guys.
Payments on all this stuff, let's be honest.
Probably. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so the car is found in a marina in Blaine, Washington, and the engine is still warm. Now, Blaine, Washington is obviously on the coast, and it's only a few miles from the Canadian border.
Ah.
So they believed that Ryan was using his boat to get as close to the Canadian border as he could. So the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were contacted. They announced that it was believed that Ryan had somehow crossed into Canada on the 19th or the 20th. Because Ryan had been spotted late in the evening of the 18th by the U.S. Coast Guard. It was dark. He was on the high seas out in the open ocean, and they had tried to stop him, but he was able to lose them.
He's in a wakeboard boat out in the ocean trying to go up and end up into Canadian waters.
Or as close to Canada as he possibly could.
Okay.
Yeah. Ryan's boat was found at a marina only a half mile from the Canadian border.
Okay.
They believed that he just walked through the forest and into Canada, having contacted someone to pick him up. Now, on August 20th, Ryan was officially charged with the murder of his wife, Jasmine.
Okay.
And on August 23rd, a week after Jasmine's body was found, a manager at the Thunderbird Motel in Hope, British Columbia, Canada, found Ryan Jenkins dead.
What?
Hanging by the neck from a clothes rack by his belt. The manhunt was officially over. He had killed himself.
Oh my gosh, I was not expecting that.
I know you
weren't. Little nugget of information.
I know you weren't. We still got a lot more
loser.
Though.
Loser.
We still got a lot more.
Loser.
Now, found on Ryan's hard drive of his laptop was a 1.5 page document titled Last Will and Testament, and it was dated August 20th, the day that he had checked into the hotel. And actually, he didn't check himself in. They found out his sister did. So his sister was the one who picked him up at the border, drove 100 miles into Hope, and registered him at this hotel, motel. Now, in the document, he expressed his deep love for Jasmine.
Sure.
While simultaneously conveying feelings of frustration and jealousy over Jasmine's friendships with other men. Ryan apologized to his family for the pain and negative media attention resulting from the situation. He bequeathed his possessions to certain family members, but offered no explanation for Jasmine's death. Ryan never mentioned Jasmine's murder or his role in it, not even mentioning that he was a suspect, which investigators found strange, thinking he might have written, like, I know you all think that I killed her, but I loved her so much, I wasn't the one that did this. But he never said anything like that in this document. Isn't that wild?
But he checked into this place, or sister checked him in.
His sister did, yeah.
Post conversation with Los Angeles police.
Yes.
So he's already knows that they're looking for his wife.
Well, they didn't say anything about her being found dead when they talked to him.
Right.
But he had to have known that she was found because it was all over the media, and people would have been contacting him and leaving messages for him. So,
yeah, because he didn't know. Well, he's such a moron. He thought no one would figure out who she was
for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd be able to make a clean getaway.
Yeah. Especially because she had really dark hair.
Mm-hmm.
She looked completely different than every picture you will see of her. I could find, I think there were like a handful of pictures I could find with her dark hair. It was very new. All right. So you want to hear what investigators believe happened?
Sure.
All right. Now, Jasmine had been texting with Robert all night. At some point during the evening, Ryan gets his hands on Jasmine's phone and reads the texts. And he's the one who texted Robert, "Suck it," from Jasmine's phone.
Of course.
After the two picked up the Mercedes from the poker tournament at the Del Mar Hilton, they must have gotten into a heated argument that became physical. Ryan began to beat Jasmine in the car with his bare hands. She somehow got herself into the back seat where Ryan cornered her and continued to beat her mercilessly, breaking her nose in the process and maybe even breaking her teeth. But she wasn't dead. Their room was located on the ground floor, and it had a small patio that faced out to the parking lot. Investigators believe that Ryan parked the car in front of the patio, leaving Jasmine in the Mercedes. He ran down the hallway to the room and was able to bring a bloodied and battered but still alive Jasmine into the hotel room through the patio because a small droplet of Jasmine's blood and hair were found on the patio.
Oh, geez.
Those staying in the adjacent and surrounding rooms did hear arguing coming from Ryan and Jasmine's room around 3 a.m. What is believed is that the two were arguing because Jasmine had refused to protect Ryan this time. She was going to call for help and tell the truth as to what he had just done to her.
Mm.
Knowing there was no way out and that Daddy wasn't going to be able to fix this, Ryan strangled Jasmine to death.
Mm-hmm.
Probably on the bed or possibly in the bathtub. Because no traces of blood or hair were found in that room. Or the cleaning staff just does a really great job.
Right, right.
Investigators believe Jasmine's fingers were removed in the bathtub and flushed down the toilet. And possibly her teeth were smashed out during that time.
Ugh.
And no one knows what tool he used to cut through her bone. Somehow he cut through the bones in her fingers.
Yeah.
Ryan then stuffed a nude Jasmine into the suitcase and carried it out to the car through the patio. He then cleaned himself up and the hotel room. He then gathered their remaining items into his arms and checked out a little before 7. That's why we see him carrying all the items.
Why wouldn't he just carry everything out?
Through the patio?
Through the patio.
That's exactly what I thought, too.
And then call down to the desk and say, "Hey, I'm checking out."
Yeah, it looks super suspicious that he's carrying all of these items in his arms.
Yeah, you don't really have to physically go up and say, "Hi, we're leaving." I mean, basically, you just have to be out of the room, more or less. But, yeah, that's kind of sketch. Carrying stuff.
Yeah, well, so while driving north on the 5, Ryan was looking for somewhere to dump the suitcase.
Sure.
He spots a large apartment complex and exits the freeway at Beach Boulevard. I can picture that sign in my head right now.
Mm-hmm.
Finds an empty dumpster in the alleyway and disposes of Jasmine, leaving her to be found 24 hours later. He just tossed her out like she was garbage.
What are the chances that he did that? You know, and there's a guy digging through the dumpster, just happens to find it. Meaning, if a little more time had gone by, other garbage would have been stacked on top of it.
Exactly.
No one would have ever been the wiser.
Exactly.
Huh.
It was,
I mean,
almost a miracle that she was found.
Yeah.
Because if the suitcase would have been covered up with other trash.
Oh, yeah. No, never.
No. And then dumped in the landfill. We wouldn't know where she was. Her family wouldn't know.
Right.
So it's not known for certain if Ryan goes back to their apartment or just heads towards Las Vegas, where he goes to his storage unit to pick up the boat.
Gotcha. Okay.
Drives north to Washington, uses the boat to get as close as he possibly can to the Canadian border, crosses the border, and is met by his sister. So there's no fence, there's no wall.
Yeah, because it's Canada.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're walking through forest.
Pretty much.
And someone's going to pick you up. Ryan's sister drives him to the Thunderbird Motel, checks him in for 3 days, and then on the third day, Ryan commits suicide, leaving behind the last will and testament. So they believe he committed suicide on the 23rd because the manager had seen him the night before.
Okay.
He had gotten food or something. And Ryan never took any responsibility for the pain that he caused Jasmine's family and friends in that letter. He just didn't really even acknowledge it. And this guy was a monster and just a ticking time bomb, really.
No kidding.
Now, due to Jasmine's murder and Ryan's death, or the show Megan Loves a Millionaire was immediately pulled from the air after only 3 episodes have been released.
Because he was on it.
Because he was on it.
Ugh. Mm-hmm.
And For the Love of Money 3 was never aired. It's never been seen.
Oh, my gosh.
This case became a media firestorm for a while. I remember when this happened.
Glad you remember things. I don't remember any of this.
Well, I mean, this is always what kind of piqued my interest.
Yeah.
And it really left people with questions. How was someone so volatile with a record of domestic violence allowed to compete in a reality dating show?
Yes.
Putting all participants and production at risk.
Yes.
Well, easy.
Oh.
It just wasn't found. And reality television was pretty new, so the vetting process isn't very specific, and it varies by network, even today.
So what about him? Why did they choose him? How did he make it to the show? There's got to be, hundreds of people that want to be on a show.
So every interview that I read, every interview that I saw, they all said he was relatively handsome.
Okay.
And he was charming. That was it.
Jeez.
That's what he had going for him.
God, the two things I lack.
Shut up.
See, I have the millions, but just not the... charming handsomeness.
Now, generally, candidates for reality television fill out a questionnaire of detailed personal information. You got family, job history, past significant others, etc. Then there's the psychological evaluation, which includes written testing, a psychiatric history, and usually contestants meet with a psychologist. Then there's the criminal background check, where every county a candidate has ever lived is searched for court documents and arrest warrants pertaining to the person.
Okay.
But you can fudge that.
Can you?
Meaning you can fudge where you've lived. If you've lived in some place for 2 months and something happens, why are you going to put that you lived there?
Oh, so they just go off of the information he gave them.
Yeah, there's not a huge vetting process. Well, there wasn't then. There is now, because a couple things have happened. Now, VH1 had used a company that the network had been working with since 2003, but they only specialize in U.S.-based criminal searches. And since Ryan was a Canadian citizen, the company subcontracted out the search to a Canadian firm. And Ryan's record came back perfectly clean.
So how was he in the U.S.? Was he on a work visa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then because he was married to her?
Stop. Hold that, okay?
I'm holding.
So Ryan was invited to be on Megan Wants a Millionaire.
Sure.
Wearing his fake Rolex and pretending to be someone that he wasn't.
Right.
What I had read is that Ryan's dad was able to have his record expunged at some point after he served his probation. But that's never been verified. That's just out there.
Okay.
Now, Ryan's dad, his name is Dan, made an interesting statement to the Calgary Sun after Ryan's body had been found, publicly expressing his belief in his son's innocence regarding the murder of Jasmine. And I'm going to read it to you. Okay.
Lovely.
Saying Ryan was kind. He was sweet. He was innocent. He went to Hollywood and something down there in these last 4 months, including this girl, just destroyed him. I advised him 50 times to get rid of that relationship. I'm not yet convinced that he did this crime yet. He was terrified and alone. If my son was guilty, he was crazy. He was not the boy we knew. No one can prove that Ryan is guilty in Jasmine's death. Although the dads say that he can't prove Ryan's innocence either. He maintained that Ryan was a fine young man, urging authorities to continue examining DNA and forensic evidence to determine his son's involvement. So he basically is portraying Ryan as a victim of circumstance and the pressures he faced leading up to his suicide. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, his dad's an enabler and
totally
in denial and all the rest of it and wants to believe. And
mm-hmm. His mom was too.
Yeah. I bet his dad's got some skeletons in his closet too.
Oh, maybe.
I know. I can't. I'm just making that up, but it's interesting where people come from.
Where they think they can get away with certain things.
Yeah, like that's a learned behavior, or you kind of have an idea that maybe it's doable.
Hmm.
And a lot of times that comes from a parent. Hmm. And that idea of looking at his dad and seeing this level of success and money, and I'm sure his dad's done some interesting shady deals. I'm just going to throw that out there because his son's a psycho and whatever, big loser, right?
Allegedly.
Well, he killed himself.
He did.
Mm-hmm. And he clearly beat her and went to jail in Vegas.
Yeah.
So he's capable of it.
And
that's not his first time.
He beat an ex-girlfriend in Canada.
And the dad got him out, which means mm-hmm. that's not that shocking to the dad. So someone who is not shocked by that has had some experience with it.
Mm.
That's my opinion. I don't care if people disagree with me, because that, I think, is a reasonable opinion.
Mm.
That only someone who is somewhat, to some extent, capable of it would be comfortable with it. Just like I said, if we were who we were and then our kid did something terrible like that as an adult, I would not bail him out.
No.
I'd be like, whoa, we need to really sit and think about this because this is terrible. And instead his dad's like, no. It's like a episode of The Sopranos.
Ooh, we were just talking about that.
Yeah. In other words, someone who's already been in the crime, it's not a big deal. They're like, well, I'm going to get him out and then I'll talk to him later about it. Because to them, that's the number one need, is just to get him out of the jail, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have an interesting fact.
Oh, good.
And this is what I stopped you from saying before.
Okay.
Some of Jasmine's close friends and family have stated that they actually believed that Jasmine married Ryan as a business transaction. His visa was about to expire, and he had promised Jasmine $10,000 to marry him. Only he never paid up, and Jasmine felt swindled, promising to pay Jasmine when he won the money on the new reality show. But that Ryan had actually fallen in love with Jasmine, and she had just kind of put up with him, and that's why she was trying to get the union annulled. Huh. Annulled.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
But he abused her in the meantime.
Right.
He was not a good guy to her. He was not acting like he loved her or that he even liked her.
Well.
So she was staying with him to get the $10,000.
But that's not very much money.
It's not, but I don't know, honey.
I don't even know why someone would do it for $100,000.
Yeah, not to be married to that jackass.
Because they're pissing money away just to live this fake lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. But I think they believed that looking a certain way and faking that they were in the Hollywood scene would get them into bigger and better and greater things.
It could. I mean, plenty of people have obviously done that.
They have.
They faked it till they made it kind of thing.
I think that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I would. I mean, again, I'm just making up random numbers here, but I bet there's a significant percentage of people in the Hollywood scene that are faking it and just hoping to make it. And then Hollywood type LA washes them out and some make it through.
It's awful.
And then we look and then we only hear about the ones that made it. We don't hear about the
ones
hundreds
that are
of thousands of people. Yeah. That are basically trying to fake it till they make it and they don't make it.
Yeah. All right. So all my information came from a crap ton of articles and write-ups. I mean, you can imagine how much information there is on this case. And I did watch a show called The Playboy Murders, yeah. And it's hosted by Holly Madison. And it has 3 seasons. There's a lot of people within Playboy that have had something happen to them. So,
ooh, can I give you a quick story, personal story, relating to Playboy,
about Playboy?
And faking it?
Okay. No, let's save it for after the show.
Okay.
If you want to hear that story and you want an unfiltered and unedited discussion on this case from the two of us, from these crazy people named Daniel and Melissa, stay tuned for,
listening.
Yeah, for after the show. Yeah. All right. Be careful.
For marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always a better option.
Yep.
All right. Bye.
Bye.